Good morning, everyone. Dave Weiner here, and it is Sunday, May 18th, 2014. A few interesting ideas floating around out there. A lot of it instigated by the leaking of the New York Times internal document about their position or where they find themselves in their evolution at this point. You know, it's funny because that is by far more interesting than all the drama around the firing of their executive editor. Although, of course, that is super interesting because it's about people, and people love to talk about people, and people love to share their judgment about things like that and come to conclusions and use it as a way of expressing who they are and all that kind of great stuff. But I thought it was very interesting. Well, it certainly led to a very interesting discussion on the web about how everybody's, why is it that the Times approaches things, important things like this, the way they do? And there was a wonderful comment by a person whose name I don't know. He goes by the handle Arthole. And he explained that inside, and this is something that I knew because I've worked with a lot of organizations and I've been inside of them and bumped up against the walls like this. It's probably why I don't work inside of an organization, is that they don't encourage people to really explore new ideas. The sort of constraints that they're under really don't allow that to happen. And I get it because, you know, I put out an idea a few days ago for a hackathon to redesign the New York Times homepage and have been sending emails privately to people whose support I would like to have and have gotten back nothing. I mean, nobody says anything. And, you know, I think about it, you know, what if I had gotten a sort of inquiry like that? I would have gone through this kind of a thought process. I would have said, well, you know, yeah, maybe, but it's going to piss off people at the New York Times, so why bother, like, doing that, you know? There are more important things to do that don't involve pissing off people at the New York Times. And if that's the way I feel, and I assume that I am projecting because I haven't heard back from people yet, maybe they're just, you know, taking their time, which is certainly a possibility. That if I feel that way as an outsider, if that's the first thing that I think of, then what must it be like to be an insider? You know, your paycheck depends on keeping everybody around you basically happy with you. If they're not happy with you, well, you might not keep the job. And people, I think people who have jobs at the New York Times generally want to keep them. It's a good job. It's very good on the resume. And no matter what happens with the New York Times, your own life career will work out better if you don't get fired. It's better to move on gracefully, right? So that's why these things, like, they don't get tried. But, and then I just posted a thing on Twitter about, you know, this crazy thing that's going on with blogging in GIF. I mean, if you have an idea, you know, I had an idea that I wanted to put out in Twitter earlier, and it just didn't fit in 140 characters. You could set the scene in 140 characters, but you couldn't ask the question and set the scene. And so what you could do is do half of the scene setting and half of the question asking and confuse the hell out of everybody, which is just going to get you a lot of confusion coming back, and, well, why bother? And so I just asked the question. I didn't ask the question. I just set the scene without, like, to ask the question, I just put a question mark at the end of it. Not very clear. I mean, did I think it was a good idea or a bad? Well, I did have an opinion, but there was no room to put the opinion other than to say that I felt that the conclusion that the person who wrote the article had was questionable. And I did that by putting a question mark at the end. A little subtle, right? But that's what the 140 character limit has forced us to do. And it, or, on the other hand, if it doesn't fit in 140 characters, there's always the possibility of going and making a GIF. Now, how do you do that? Well, you open up a text editor, you type in the paragraph that is greater than 140 characters, and then you take a screenshot of it, and you go into your graphics program, and you crop it, and then you basically put it on your hard drive, and then go to Twitter and create a new tweet and add a picture, and then everybody will see the text, but it won't really be text. It'll be a GIF. Because Twitter has a special rule that they will display a GIF, but they won't. There's just no way to put more than 140 characters onto it for them to display. And this is like, anyway. Obviously, this is a limit that has to go. But that's not the point of this little mini podcast. The point is that if you're on the user side of these things, the frustration grows with it's the inverse relationship to the will to not piss anybody off and to keep your job. So while people are keeping their jobs, this is why it happens at the Times, and I guess why it happens at Twitter too. 140 character limit is a defining thing for Twitter. I don't know how they view it beyond that, but I understand that they feel that this is part of really defines who they are, and that if you work inside of Twitter, that, you know, really questioning the wisdom of that might get you fired. I mean, you do it once, probably everybody goes, oh yeah, well, I know, right? And they don't fire you. You do it twice and they go, okay, well, you know, we do know about that, we've been working here for a while, blah 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 blah. You do it enough times and yeah, you'll get fired. It's because they feel they can't change it. Then the New York Times, very similarly to the 140 character limit, very similarly, has the concept of a front page. And a front page is a thing of beauty. It really is a thing of beauty. I know because I grew up with these front pages. This is what the data structure of our household was in the what I grew up with, the thing that tied us all together was really the front page of the New York Times. I know it's really sad to say, but it's the truth. I think there are probably a lot of households in the 60s and 70s, when I was growing up, that worked like that. You know, you have parents who were, this is New York, so there's a lot of people who do sort of intellectual sort of jobs, teachers. My parents were both teachers. At times, my father worked inside of corporations with not a desk job. I mean, you know, he was a guy with a degree, and, you know, he did the kind of work people with degrees do, you know. Who knows what the hell that is? But he was a New York Times reader. My mother was, and so everybody in the family was, and this was safe stuff. You could talk about what was on the front page, and like nobody would get mad at you. But really, anything else that you expressed an opinion about as a kid, well, you were like pretty much probably not going to be too happy with the result. So this was a safe way for, you know, whatever. That data structure was a big deal in our house. So I appreciate it, but it's no longer a relevant data structure. Just ain't happening. Nobody cares what goes on the front page. Yet the editorial structure of that news organization, I was going to say newspaper, the editorial structure of that news organization is still centered around that. They have their meetings. The meetings are, what are the meetings about? Where does something go? You know, what page is it on? What section does it belong in? Whose job is it to do this? I don't really know this for a fact, but I'm just taking a wild guess that that's the way it works. And so that's why the front page of the New York Times can be so ignored by the users, because it really has been obsolete for a very, very long time. A very long time. Very obsolete now. Yet, if you go to NewYorkTimes.com, it's still what you see is the front page. And it's really not what it should be. That's not the way it works. As Doc Searles put so incredibly well today, that it is no longer about filling up space. That's not what news is. News always really has been a flow. And if you worked inside of a news organization, you kind of know that, because the data structure of the news organization was the front page. That's their output data structure. But their input data structure is a river. It's a lot of them coming at them. And the role of a news organization in the future is to take their river and make it useful for everybody. That's what news organizations do. The river is wild and untamed, and it's not prioritized, and you can't really, you know, things that, I mean, everybody gets absorbed in the drama of personality stuff, yet there is other news going on. And if we just follow the gravity, if we don't have news people working on news, then all we're going to get is sort of this very democratic idea of news, which has the advantage of being democratic. But on the other hand, it's intellectually unsatisfying and also not wise, because we need, to some extent, to be informed. I mean, I don't know what that extent is, but I don't want to test the limits on that. So that's why we're in so much trouble, because and my guess is probably that the management structures of organizations are probably obsolete too, much like the front page of the newspaper became obsolete, that intellectual processes and product development and support and bug fixing and all the kind of stuff that's just so much a part of what we do probably is a river too. And, you know, and it modeled very well after that. And now individual brains, however, have to deal with a river and turn it into a front page. Why? Because it's got to become a to-do list. You can't do everything that your mind thinks of doing. Anyway, so just some thoughts for Sunday. Why we can maybe get along better is if we understand these things, that there's this tension between the user. Now, the user, let me just go over this point, is that the user of the front page is very silent in the expression of their frustration. The silence is they just don't go back. And they find other places to sample the river, and that's where they... So the answer for the Times, I'm sorry, but really is, make that homepage, make it a river, and start right now. And make it a bad river, because that's all you're going to be able to come up with to begin with. And this is very antithetical to the way organizations work. Organizations will not do this, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to set up a hackathon outside of the structure of the New York Times. If New York Times employees want to participate, that would be fantastic. But they don't have to. We can deal with this one, and we'll present the results to the Times in a fashion that they could just say, okay, well, let's give that a try and see what happens. And at some point, they'll take ownership of it, and then they'll start using their creativity, which is really, they're, as individuals, very creative and intelligent people. They'll own it, and then all kinds of good stuff will happen. But it's a process, and that process happened much faster outside than it would ever happen inside. And as a one of the side effects is, no doubt, this pisses off people at the Times. But on the other hand, it secretly should make them happy, is my feeling. Anyway, thanks for listening. That's all really I have to say today. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.